This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you ka-ching. Ka-ching. Come on, guys, we talked about this. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And once you start selling, Shopify makes getting paid simple by instantly accepting every type of payment. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. You want to grow big? Shopify. You want to grow small? Shopify. You want to grow medium rare? Also Shopify. Shopify powers 10% of all commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
And now, subpar Ian McKellen.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 237. Brought to you by DCBS and iFanboy listeners like you.
It's quite cool.
Welcome to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 237. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Hello, everybody.
And filling in for vacationing Ron is amateur film critic Paul Montgomery.
Hey, how you doing? I'm actually recording from my bathtub this week because it's a sizzler out there.
Oh, that's my line. You've stolen my line, Paul Montgomery.
You've never said sizzler before.
Why am I talking like a robot?
Why is anybody talking like any of this?
Because it's 86 degrees out.
That's
it's really
that
hot.
It's hot when you're in a confined room with lots of equipment turned on.
It's also about the humidity. My barometer is crazy today.
I like people out there to try to just figure out what he means by equipment and just let your imagination run with the wind.
At fanboy.com, we talk about the weather and also comics. We read comics every week. We read a bunch of comics. One of us picks the best one. They write about it on the website. They talk about it on this podcast along with other books of the week and various topics of interest. And before we get to the show, a quick reminder and a warning. This is a review show. We'll talk about this week's releases. So if you're worried about spoilers, skip the sections. We had someone complain last week for the first time in years. Listen to the warning again. This is a review show. There'll be spoilers. So don't listen if you haven't read your books yet. Otherwise, it's not our fault.
I didn't even listen to the show until I had my books.
When I was on vacation, I didn't listen to the show for 2 weeks until I read my books. That's how it works. Josh, you had the pick of the week this week. It was a light week. It was a small week. Not a lot of books. I only bought like 9 books.
I want to finish my equipment joke. I want people to understand that when you go to Connor's, it's just a series of large things that are very hot and they buzz and they're under sheets. And if you touch the sheets, Connor freaks out. Don't!
How many times do I have to tell you not to touch the sheets, Josh? How many times do I have to tell you before you get
I have to
Irish
know
head?
That one of them is making a noise that sounds a lot like my name.
Are you trying to create life from cadaver pieces?
That's questions, Paul.
Pizza crust.
Under a blanket?
Just go with
I had the pick of the week. That's true. And it was a wonderful week because I looked and I was like, oh, hey, that's doable right there. Even in the midst of infant rearing and all the stuff that I have to do, I was like, I think I can finish this before midnight this week.
Okay, we're going to ignore infant rearing.
Galt. That's cheap. That was really...
It really was, but it's hot out.
I know. That's an excuse. Like, later things are going to get really uncomfortable. It's hot. I don't care. I said it. Women are only belong in the kitchen. It's hot.
That was a time bomb joke. At first, I didn't get that, and then... And then it hit hard.
Okay, so I had a bunch of books that weren't a whole lot, and I ended up picking Avengers Prime number 1 by Brian Bendis and Alan Davis. And
we're in an Avengers run.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't have a problem with that. I think this is an exciting time for Avengers books. If you're an old, you know, Josh and I are old Avengers fans.
True.
People need to remember that, you know, this is the Marvel books we loved in the 80s and 90s were Avengers books. Mm-hmm. So this is a great time to be us.
It is. Well, I mean, really, like, look at it. Like, we've been going in this one direction of the Civil War where everyone hated each other, and then Secret Invasion where everyone thought they might hate each other, and then
everyone hated the books.
And then finally into Dark Reign where everyone hated the one guy, but half of them were dead, so it didn't matter. And I'm glad to be out of it. And I think that we're feeling that right now, and it's fun. Now, that being said, like, I don't want to buy 5 Avengers books a month. That's $4 an issue, blah, blah, blah. And this was the one that I was thinking, maybe I won't get this one.
Well, it's only a miniseries, we should reiterate.
Yeah, it's 5 issues. Yep. And I am not, my two partners, Ron and Connor, are big Alan Davis fan. I like him, he's fine, but, you know, I don't go out of my way to get his work. So I was like, all right, well, the big draw on this seems to be Alan Davis. And then I was listening to Bendis talk on Word Balloon, and he was describing what this is, and he said it was akin to Civil War: The Confession, which was the best issue, probably the best moments out of Civil War came in that one sort of one-off issue, which was Tony Stark talking to the dead body of Captain America, just saying, "Yeah, I think I screwed up," and it was a really good issue, and
yeah, it made it really worthwhile, sort of.
So, and the fact is that what you have is these three characters who are on the cover is Steve Rogers, Captain America.
Captain Rogers.
Captain Steve. Who drives.
They can't figure out what they're calling him. They haven't really nailed that down yet.
I like that people are starting to call him Captain Rogers, which is sort of...
And I like that he's in charge of everything.
Yeah, and he's got the Steve McQueen turtleneck.
Yes,
that's
he does.
Important. Tony
Hopefully
Stark,
not the Steve McQueen liver, though.
The cooler king.
Tony Stark, Iron Man, and of course Thor. Now, all of these characters have issues going on between... Well, actually, no, they're just both mad at Tony, if I remember this correctly.
There aren't really any issues between Thor and Captain Steve.
Yeah.
It should be CAP apostrophe N. That's
it should,
how should
and he should have a crusty old boat like the Orca. Captain Steve!
and a pipe.
And a fish stick chain.
No, I am.
This is going to be a bad one. Anyway, but the thing is, these sort of tensions between the characters have been going on a long time, and like, I want this series to be the thing that squashes them, and that's what he said it was going to be. So after this mini is over in 2013...
December, I think.
Yeah, because they're bi-monthly. Hopefully, and I think it's also taking place sort of out of the current time stream, so that they get sucked out of right after Asgard goes down. And so, theoretically, after this is over, they'll have worked out whatever issues it is, and we can get all over that elephant in the room tension, and they can stop fighting with each other, because I'm sick of it.
Well, the quick plot synopsis is Asgard has fallen. This is the end of Siege. When it takes place is a bit of a mystery, because Captain America's in his black nebulous costume. Iron Man's in his old armor from Siege. Hawkeye is Hawkeye instead of Rodan. So who knows when this actually takes place. But they're surveying Asgard. They find the Rainbow Bridge is not guarded anymore and broken. And
just
the Rainbow
awesome.
Bridge turns into a big swirling portal. It sucks the three of them into another universe or state of being or dimension or whatever. So now Tony, with his old armor, which doesn't do what he wants it to because it's old. And
which has been a theme.
And Captain America and Thor have to work together to escape from this demon realm, which I really liked a lot. I love the fact that this is totally unexpected, unlike every other Avengers book. They're fighting goblins, which is
And they just sort of all wake up to find themselves in a different place. And you know, Steve goes, he's like, "Oh, there's a town," and he walks into.
He's totally in Smurf Village.
Yeah, except they're all trollish ogres.
Hello, trolls.
And then there's a really, really beautifully drawn troll fight.
Yes,
and he wins. I know there's a spoiler. Everyone's going to be surprised. Captain America wins.
And he picks up the shield.
We have to start calling him Captain Steve just as much.
Captain Steve.
Captain Steve. Then Iron Man wakes up in a field and fixes his armor. That's the scene with him.
The grass is purple.
Yeah. And then Thor finds himself in the ruins of somewhere. Thor seems to know where he is because they all seem to be in these sort of Asgard realms.
Yes.
And then there's his old Thor enemy, the Enchantress, and some demons and things like that. And it was just like, I was like, this is Marvel Comics. Like, it looked like classic Marvel Comics. I think that one of the things Bendis had been saying is that Alan Davis really brought it in this book, and I think he did. I think the layouts in this are spectacular. Really, the pages are something special, especially after they sort of go through the portal and they end up where they are. And so I was really impressed by that. And it's just like, I don't know, it felt like a Neil Adams book, the way that it was laid out a little bit. And it, you know, just like a throwbacky thing, but with all modern production and stuff like that. just a good time all around. And these are the characters I want to read about, and I want this story to be told. And so I really like, I enjoyed it. Kind of surprised myself.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. This was also my pick of the week because it felt very much like an old school Marvel book. Mm-hmm. If you were our age and are in your 30s, Alan Davis, he drew some of the biggest books of your childhood. And he's one of my all-time favorites. And he this is some of the best stuff he's drawn in a long time.
I think that's absolutely true.
Just gorgeous pages, great character work. This just made me happy in a way that all these Avengers books are making me happy. I know Josh said earlier he doesn't want to buy 4 books, but I'll buy 4, I'll buy 10, I'll buy 20 if they're all good. Mm-hmm. And for me, so far, so good. And I'm having a great time reestablishing the heroes. I mean, that's the whole point of the heroic age, is putting the heroes back front and center. And it's just a lot of fun, especially if you're an Avengers fan. And this is just a gorgeous book.
Yep. Yeah, but big concepts, and they're not on Earth, and so it's just sort of like anything goes.
But this is in a 7-way tie for my pick of the week. I enjoyed it.
And every book for the week.
I love the crazy stuff with Asgard. I'm becoming more and more of a Thor fan these days. I've been going back and reading the older stuff, and just like the Rainbow Bridge is broken, so it turns into a crazy maelstrom, and it'll take you to different dimensions. And I love that kind of stuff. And you know, it's and there's some fun little Bendis-y moments, like when Iron Man wakes up, he's like, not in a coffin, it's because it's dark wherever he is. And but then again, it doesn't feel like New Avengers Bendis, it feels like something different. I think he's intentionally doing something a little bit more classic with the Avengers and with this.
You know, one thing I noticed right at the beginning, I thought the first few pages were not the strongest. The first two-page splash was good, but then the couple of pages of them fighting, I didn't love. One of the things right away, I was like, wow, they got into fighting right away. And I realized that it's kind of a stick, they have to. Let's just get it over with. You know, like all of a sudden, all this stuff bubbles to the surface and the tensions are coming out. And I really like that they just got all that cathartic stuff out of the way now. So everything's established. They know what's going on.
Yeah, we start there so we know where they get to by the end.
Yep.
Yeah. It was uncomfortable. It's like, you don't want to see them fight. You don't see your parents fight.
You want to see Captain Steve act like that.
No. What's more uncomfortable, is Tony and Steve fighting or Aunt May yelling at Peter Parker when she's possessed by the negative man?
It's Captain America. I don't ever want to see. Captain America's a constant. So he shouldn't lose his shit, and he shouldn't do it in front of the kids.
Well, there's always something unsettling about the elderly, and when they're possessed, that's even worse. So.
Yeah, that's true. Also, it should be mentioned, there's a reprint of a Walt Simonson drawn story about the sort of the coming together of the Avengers. And it's awesome. If you don't know what we're talking about when we say Walt Simonson, like, check this out.
I love him.
Oh, it's so good. It's really mm-hmm. nice.
We're going to do something a little interesting for this episode. I thought it might be interesting to pair each of the comics we talk about with a classic film.
Connor will suggest a wine.
Okay, so, and I hope you know a lot of wines. So all right, if you enjoyed this sort of couples retreat version of Siege Aftermath Avengers Prime, you might also enjoy Three Men and a Baby, because it's also about three friends and sort of their struggles, and they have some issues together. And I think Steve Guttenberg would make a really good Thor. So.
I think I see where he's going with these. I want to know what's next when we talk about Brightest Day. Brightest Day number 3.
I don't think I've been around to talk about this series yet.
I don't think so. I haven't been reading it, so.
This is fantastic, and this is the closest they've come to recapturing the magic of 52. I think that they've come darn close.
Yes.
This proves that the weekly series is all about the writing team. In 52, mm-hmm. you had a fantastic writing team. Here you've got Geoff Johns and Peter Tomasi. And that was always the problem with the last two series. So this has been great, and I love that it's a slow burn, almost a drama series. It's not so much an action. I mean, there is action, there's fighting, but it's mostly about these characters coming to grips with being back and figuring out what's going on. And I like that there's new reveals every other week, and it bounces between the characters really well, and it's all handled very elegantly. And even the art team's strong. I mean, you've got Ivan Reis doing pages. You've got Artie and Sif. That's totally wrong. You know, Patrick Gleason. These are strong artists. And this is a great book.
Yeah, and I didn't know that sort of the format of 52 was something that I missed until I started reading this. And I was like, I really like having this, you know, every couple of weeks. And I love the sort of the anthology. And I know it's probably not for everybody, because it is, like you said, a slow burn, and it might be frustrating. And then there's stuff like, you know, I don't really care about the Hawk and Dove stuff, and that's not in this issue. But I like everything going on with Hawkman and Hawkgirl.
I like that Aquaman's frustrated. He can only call upon dead fish.
Yeah.
Including big giant dead orcas.
It's like every and it's been happening in every version of Brightest Day, every issue of this since Zero, where he tries to summon something and it's a dead fish. Like, this is a real problem. Like, this is this can't go on for much longer.
You thought your phone malfunctioning was like a thing. Yeah. I don't know. It just keeps dropping calls. I mean, just think for Zombie Fish.
Yeah. Just like, oh, come on. That one's dead, too. It's just, and whoever,
each time
I don't,
you think, maybe it'll be okay this time. And
yeah, that's what it feels like. And he just looks really frustrated and forlorn. But who, I don't know which of the writers is working on the Martian Manhunter stuff, but that's, I think, my favorite. There's sort of this ongoing mystery with Martian Manhunter, and whoever's doing it, either Tomasi or Johns, the character
voice
is really great. Yeah, I was thinking that as well, and I would love to see, you know, at least a mini or something with his Martian Manhunter.
Isn't Patrick Gleason drawing it? So it makes sense that it would be Tomasi.
It does look like him,
yeah. Anyway, I think the drama aspect of it, the unfolding mystery aspect of it, is really strong. I like that you get it every other week, and it's all done by a really high quality team. And this has been a fantastic. I mean, we're only in 3 in of 26, but still, I mean, it's been fantastic.
Lots and also, of flaying, too, which I know people are complaining about because it's called Brightest Day. Why is it so grim, and why are there muscles and sinews and things? Like, well, that's interesting.
It's the beginning.
It's, yeah.
It's, I mean, that's the thing. Like, it's the beginning. Like, this is what happens every time one of these things come up. People go, oh, this isn't happy like I want it to be. Well, give it a sec. You know, look at what he's done. Yeah. Look at the Flash Rebirth. I mean, come on.
He has a mind meld with a dog in here. It's delightful.
I like the new reveal that Dead Man's White Ring releases, when he tries to use as a power, it releases avatars of all the returned heroes and villains, and he doesn't know why. That's cool.
Yeah, it's like a Patronus.
There's lots of cool, very interesting mysteries happening in this book, and I like getting more and more pieces of it every time we get an issue.
That's a Harry Potter thing, Patronus.
Yes.
Okay.
So what movie?
Brightest Day. If you like Brightest Day, which I think is a great sort of ongoing mystery, especially with the Martian Manhunter stuff, Serpico. Sort of hard boiled a little bit.
I love that movie.
So there you go.
I just bought the book. I haven't read it yet, though. Hawkeye and Mockingbird number one, Josh. Lots of people were shocked this wasn't your pick of the week.
Yeah. Here's the thing about this book. I really liked it, just right off. I think that it showed great growth from both Jim McCann, the writer, and David Lopez, the artist. I thought that New Avengers: The Reunion, which was the sort of prequel to this, I suppose, was good, but it was newer guys, is what I think. And I thought that this showed a really, really nice structure, and like I was noticing, I was like, this is being built really well. And then the other thing is, there was a lot here. I sort of poked fun at some of the dialogue, and I thought that it actually had been dialed back to be a little less cutesy, coming out of Clint, for example, but still that same attitude was there. Not a bad thing. And there's just a whole lot going through. I'm flipping through it now, and I'm looking at all the stuff being set and all the things being put on the table. And
it's a really full issue.
Yeah, and how it ties back. But it didn't feel that way. Like, when I was reading it, I didn't flip a page and go, oh, look at all these words. I really didn't feel like that. And I think that that has something to do with the way it was written. And I think that I think David Lopez did a really good job with it. His layouts, he's gotten even better.
He's getting better and better.
He is. And the other thing is, like, one of the things in the reunion, that I think that he was a little weaker on some of the faces. And as I go through this, like, I'm getting used to this as being Clint Barton's face, because people are drawing him all sorts of different ways. And I like Captain Steve's face in this, too. although he's in his suit here. I hate the energy shield. I know that's not anyone's fault, but I don't want him to have an energy shield.
Yeah.
I don't know why. That really bugs me. I loved the scene with Captain Steve and Clint. I was like, oh, that is what I want right there. And it shows that development, that maturation of their relationship, because like it starts off right away where he's like, he called me a Boy Scout. And like that's, of course, what Clint always used to say to Steve. And it's just like that. It's really nice to see these two guys together.
And then bringing in Bucky, too.
And just the sort of how he doesn't quite fit in. And, it, you know, it's they don't have that same familiarity. And then at the same time, like the stuff about how Clint and Bobby are both lying to each other and doing stuff presumably for their own better good is disturbing. Like, you don't want it to happen, which is what you want to do with characters. You want to like go, no, don't do that. You're hurting me. You know, Crossfire is an old villain.
He was the villain from their very first miniseries. Yeah.
I didn't really know too much about the Phantom Rider stuff, but all that stuff is in the back. The back matter here is really instructive and really helpful. And I read through all that too. I was pretty happy. I like the way it was done too. It was done as interviews between the two of them talking about each other.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
it was good. The reason it probably wasn't pick of the week was that it was a little bit like a pilot, and a pilot sometimes is more. What's the word I'm looking for?
drunk.
Establishing.
Yes, it's trying to get work done rather than actually getting you in the gut. And it did work, and it did work very well, and I liked it for that, but I didn't feel it as much. I'm not trying to justify it or anything. I really liked this a lot, and I thought it was a great start, and I think it can only get better. So I'm glad this is going on. This is good,
yeah, it's
good
really,
stuff.
Really, really great chemistry, too, and it's a more interesting relationship than, you know, the comparable Green Arrow and Black Canary, I think, which is all about passion, and this is interesting. There's all the machinations going on in the background, like you said, and I had a lot of fun with it. So if you liked Hawkeye and Mockingbird, you might like To Kill a Mockingbird, which features a really stunning performance from Gregory Peck.
I don't see that.
All right. Red Robin number 13 is the first issue written by Fabian Nicieza and art by Marcus Tu, who's been doing it the last couple of issues anyway.
Scuttlebutt is. People are happy about this.
Yes, this is a great put to jump back on if you've been off the book or you've been looking to maybe thinking about picking up the book. It's really written very much as a new jumping on point. This is Tim Drake's official return to Gotham. He's been back in Gotham for a while, but now he's basically back in the fold, swinging around the rooftops of Batman and Robin.
He's got his groove back.
They're quippy.
It's not foreshadowing to my movie choice, but
they're acting like brothers do. If you saw our best panel feature of the week, we featured a panel of them bantering like brothers. And Fabian Nicieza, or however you pronounce his name, I'm sorry. He's done some Batman work here and there. He did some Nightwing issues. He does a really good job with the characters, and that shows through here. And this is just a really solid group, you know, Batman family issue with all the characters being set up, the relationships being reestablished, so that if you're a new reader, you can figure out what's going on and good stuff. And this guy Marcus Tu, he was an inker for a long time on the book, and now he's the full blown penciler. And he's great. He's got a nice clean
style. It's really strong. And this it's going back to when it was just Robin, the book, and it was Tim Drake. And I've missed Tim Drake for a while now. So this was a great, refreshing sort of surprise. So
yeah, if you've been off the book, are you thinking about it? Red Robin 13 is a really good jumping on point. You got a film, Paul?
A film for Red Robin? Yeah, I chose Speed Racer because it's about brotherhood.
Okay. All right. Next book.
That's how you clear a room out.
Okay. I wanted to talk about Superman/Batman Annual number 4, which is Paul Levitz and Renato Gaides or Guedes doing Batman Beyond before they get into the Adam Beechin miniseries. So this is a big full issue. And if you liked Batman Beyond, this is more of that. And it sort of proves that this is a continuity and a concept that really works.
They're slowly snaking it into the DCU.
It's a really cool world, and I mean Batman Beyond as a series was great, and this features, you know, it's a great dynamic because it's sort of like what they're doing with Batgirl, in that there's Stephanie's out there as Batgirl, and then Barbara is Oracle back at the Batcave, and they're communicating back and forth, and that sort of all started back in Batman Beyond with Bruce as a cantankerous old man with Ace the Bat-Hound. And he's on the computer talking to Terry McGinnis, the new Batman, who's sort of like a mold of Batman and Spider-Man together. You know, and there was some teen angst in the series, but that's not really here. He's matured now, and there's some drugs coming into Gotham from the grittier Metropolis, which it's an interesting development. And Metallo's in here, and Lex Luthor's in here as a very old liver-spotted man. And the only thing, I just wish that this was like a two-parter or a three-issue mini or something, because there is a lot packed in here. There's a lot of story, but it's all really good, and the art is really gorgeous.
Renato Gaides is really good. He did Supergirl. He did Superman. He's really, really good.
How's Levitz?
How's old man Levitz?
I'm fascinated by it because he was very recently the boss of everything.
Yeah,
and now he's just a writer. Like he calls the editor. The editor's like, "Yeah, I can't do that." How must that be?
I felt in comparison to the Legion stuff, which I'd been really looking forward to, I think this is a bit stronger. It's a lot of information dumping, but it does the rhythm's a bit better, and it does work. And I think the ideas are pretty cool. And you've got the old Superman in black, and he had been under the power of Starro for a while. And he lost Lois that way, and now he's back, and it's a brooding kind of Kingdom Come Superman. But it's good stuff. I recommend checking this out. It was a fun single issue, and it explains everything you need to know about Batman Beyond, even if you hadn't watched the show. And let's see, where's my note? Okay, it's you have a list. Gattaca, because that also takes place in the future.
I can actually see that somewhat. I'm glad that you're not just coming up with these off the top of your head.
No.
He put lots of thought into
it. I woke up in a cold sweat like last night at like 4 o'clock in the morning and I wrote them down.
Discount comic book service.
I wrote them like 15 minutes ago. Seriously.
Moving on. Discount comic book service offers monthly specials up to 75% off. You get 40% off all your major publishers with flat rate shipping of $5.95 on all U.S. orders. You can buy anything listed in previews. They've got over 9,000 trade paperbacks that are in stock and available for order right now. You can track your orders online. It's all available at dcbservice.com. And you see more and more people talking about DCBS now that the prices are continuing to rise and now that DC's jumping on the 309 bandwagon.
The nice thing about it is that, like, we also have been talking so much about, like, on the site about previews and how to order your comics, make sure you get what you want. It's a good option. I mean, if you're not me, it's a really good option.
Not us. If you don't have to do a show every week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm always jealous of the people talking about, oh, I got my box today, and it's a box full of comics, and it's stuff that I picked up at the shop, like, over the past few weeks, but they got a box, and it's like Christmas. It's a nice surprise, opening up a box.
You know what? There's another great Avengers book out right now. It's called Avengers The Origin. It's another miniseries. This is issue 3 from Joe Casey, Phil Noto. We're just neck deep in fun Avengers comics right now.
It's true. This is following the. Either of you reading this?
Yes.
Okay. Wow. For some reason, I didn't expect anyone to. Sorry about that, Joe. Anyway,
Joe Casey writes Avengers.
Yeah, Joe Casey.
Old school Avengers, and I will be there.
His deal is that he gets to write, apparently, when he does for Marvel, they go, pick the favorite time for you. And just tell those stories again. He's done it with the Avengers several times. He's done it with the X-Men. He's done it with Iron Man. And it's awesome because it's out of continuity. This is actually a retelling of the Avengers origin. It's almost like a low-key book, but, you know, it's updating their origin, I suppose. Or maybe it isn't. Who cares? Art by Phil Noto, favorite of mine. I think his art on this is a lot better than the last time we saw him on something where it was really stiff. I forget what it was.
It was that war book.
Yeah, a little less does. Nah, he did something for Marvel or DC.
He did a Jonah Hex issue?
Man, he was good on those. There was something he did in the middle that I was really looking forward to. Oh, it was Batman, Doc Savage? Was it that?
Oh, yeah.
And that was so great. This one, the first issue of this, I got a little, I wasn't really following it all that well because I don't think I knew what we were doing. I know it was the Avengers origin, but this is just going through and sort of placing the classic Avengers origin into now because they have cell phones and blah, blah, blah. Highlights out of this issue include the reintroduction of Meccano. The circus clown Hulk.
Ron's
robot.
2009 yes. Halloween costume.
Yeah, exactly. I can't help but think that we had something to do with putting that idea in there. I just.
You really like to subscribe a lot of influence over Joe Casey that I don't think we have.
I do. No, just that. Just I was like.
And
oh.
The Herm?
Yeah, well, the Herm.
Yeah.
We gave him a shirt, is all I'm saying. Okay. But there was a panel in here where Hulk says Herm, and I was like, that is fantastic. That made me so happy. That was worth the whole book. But besides that, also, this is a fun Hank Pym story. Hank Pym sort of. He's like getting discovery. He gets to use the Stark Labs, and he's getting all of his stuff to work out. And at this point, he hasn't beaten up the Wasp yet, so they're still really getting along, and they're flirty. And the Hulk is sort of intelligent, and Iron Man is in his big goofy costume, which is really fun.
And everybody still thinks he's the bodyguard.
Yeah,
which is fun.
It just harkens back to a really fun time, and this is the thing that Casey's really good at is writing it in this other time period. Where he has that touch of modern and that touch of classic all at the same time. He makes it work really well. And the covers for this have also been spectacular.
And a great cameo by Burt Reynolds as the circus ringmaster.
Not a surprise.
It's that silver fox, Burt Reynolds.
I love this book. It's so much fun. I love the Noto arts. It's perfect for, like, it's a throwbacky style, sort of, but without being, you know, retro. It's still very modern. And just this is Casey's wheelhouse. And this is just...
If he can do these books, that's great.
And if you liked Avengers The Origin number 3, you might also like the film Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, because it also involves cooperation with ants.
That's my favorite so far.
He didn't go with the obvious. Ants. Irredeemable number 14 came out. I just wanted to bring this up because I liked it a lot because I think it got, I'm not going to say it got off track, but it went somewhere that I was getting less interested in recently. And I feel like it pulled everybody back together in this one because it got off on this thing where we were suddenly dealing with all these other characters who we didn't really know all that well and they were kind of horrible.
Yeah, you know? Well, everyone's horrible in this book.
That's, I know. They're all
kind of irredeemable.
Hey now. Oh, it's a whole thing.
Now,
oh,
yeah. I understand that Peter Krause is busy with Parenthood.
Parenthood, right.
But I really missed him on this book.
Really?
Yeah. Diego Verdo was fine fill-in. The style was similar enough. But there was a couple of panels that were just like, and especially the last page, full-page shot was kind of like, ugh.
Norm!
Peter Krause is so, for me, He's so tied to the look and feel of the book, the character models, and just the atmosphere and the environment that when he's not there, I sort of go, I get disappointed. But this was good. The tightrope this book walks is, how do you maintain this story for so long? Because this is an evil Superman, and how long can you really get by before he kills everyone?
It's funny because it feels like a book being written by somebody new and going to, and then you realize that it's Mark Waid.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it just, it's impressive, I guess. He's sort of doing a different style, and this gets to do what he wants, which is really cool.
A friend of mine just picked up the first trade, and she texted me and said, I really enjoyed it, Irredeemable. And I said, yeah, it's kind of sneakily demented and pervy. And she said, kinda.
Yeah.
I like that aspect of it. It's Mark Waid's demented side, which is fun.
Invincible number 72.
Wait.
Oh, sorry.
Now, I read Irredeemable in trade, so I didn't read this issue. But I imagine that if you like this, you would also have to like Cop and a Half. Because my dad took a day off of work when this was originally out in theaters, and we got to go see it in theaters, and really an overlooked Burt Reynolds film.
Wait, what does it have to do with Irredeemable?
It's just a good movie.
Okay.
It's just if you like one thing that's good.
You like something that's good.
You don't...
It's a goddamn away, art.
Don't
you're giving away the 11 herbs and spices, man. This is
all right. We can't. Don't look behind the curtain. Let's just move on to Invincible 72.
Afterwards, I'll go through and watch the movie. Like, my God, he was right. I don't know how.
Well, there's the part where Burt Reynolds kills everyone.
Yeah. Invincible 72 starts up the Viltrumite War. All the stuff that's been going on all the time. Basically, lots of really violent battles in space are going on here. And so this is Ryan Otley at his best. And again, I don't know where he finds the time to do all of this work, but really he does a blood splatter, and then there's a really nice two-page spread that where the sort of the angles all askew and things are off because they're in space, so like there's no up or down or anything like that, and it's just this wonderful piece. I bet the original pencils for it are spectacular, and then at the end someone else gets their guts ripped out, which is like a thing lately, but it's quite grisly, is what I'm saying, which is not going to surprise anyone.
I just bought the 10th trade, and I'm excited to get to that one. And I just bought the second library edition, which is exciting.
Ooh.
Because Ryan Otley art and big style page is fantastic.
He's a guy whose art, I mean, the bigger it gets, the better it's going to look.
That's really why I bought it. Like, I have all the trades. I don't need it for the story, but to get the Ryan Otley in absolute size is...
I don't need him to leave this book, but I would really love to see him on some other stuff. You know what I mean? I just think it'll be awesome to see. But
well, like Scalped?
Keep up with it. Probably not Scalped, no. No, that's probably not his thing.
Now, Paul, you read... I'm sorry. I keep
all right.
jumping on.
I don't read Invincible, but I do own a thesaurus, so Unbreakable.
Unbreakable?
Kind of weak, I'll be honest.
I know. Well, this idea to be in the bathtub the entire time is not really panning out because
wasn't
I'm
there a movie
what about
called
the movie
Invincible?
With
Mark Wahlberg.
Okay. I actually know a guy who was an extra in that.
Say hi to your alien guts for me.
Kind of a douchebag, but... All right, so...
The guy.
Yeah, we better hurry up because I'm getting really pruny. I look like a Dick Tracy villain at this point.
Red Hood, The Lost Days, number one. This is the first issue of the 6-issue mini written by Judd Winnick.
Now,
with art by Pablo Raimondi, who you know from X-Force back in the day. X-Factor.
X-Factor. I'm surprised you bought this.
You know what?
Because I was like, Jason Todd. No one
I don't
likes
like Jason
Todd.
What I do like is when we interviewed Judd Winnick in... One of the many cons. I was trying to tell people about stuff that happened at cons, con stories, and I couldn't place them at a specific con.
I was looking for an interview that we did the other day to link on the site, and I was looking in the wrong year entirely.
So I
was like, we talked to him at this con, and I was like, oh no, that was 2 years prior. Oh God.
Yeah, so I don't remember which con it was. Judd Winnick. It was probably San Francisco, because that's where he lives. And it was either off camera or on camera. I don't remember which, but he's talking about how he doesn't understand the love for Jason Todd. Jason Todd is clearly a psychopath, and I like that he sees him properly. At least he understands that he is not a hero. So then, in that sense, I was interested in this. And this is actually very, very good. It starts off in the past with Ra's al Ghul briefing his daughter Talia on the day's events and what he needs done because she's his right-hand woman. And, you know, he needs this person killed and he needs this uranium shipment sent here. And then he, as an aside, he sort of says, oh, and by the way, the detective's partner was killed by the Joker. And he moves on to the next thing. And so she stops dead cold in tracks because she's in love with Batman. And then we jump into the future where we find out that Ra's al Ghul and Talia have been sort of hiding Jason Todd this whole time and been training him. Very, very similar to Bucky Winter Soldier story, even more.
Oh.
I enjoyed this quite a bit.
It was good stuff. I was surprised by it. And I like all the stuff with the father and daughter, with Ra's and Talia. It was really nice.
Yes.
And if you liked this, you'll probably like Under the Red Hood, the animated film, which is coming out. Also Sidekicks, which is a great martial arts film. Featuring Chuck Norris and the kid from Sequest who killed himself.
Ernie Reyes Jr.
Yeah.
He killed himself?
Yeah. No, not Ernie Reyes Jr., the other kid.
No, the kid. Jonathan.
He was also in Never Ending Story 2.
No, I know.
A lot of sitcoms.
Yeah, yeah. But Ernie Reyes Jr. is still alive, as far as we know.
Joe Piscopo is also in it.
Wow.
He is alive.
Now I just now I don't know how old you are.
I know. It's a, yeah.
Paul, hit us with the last book.
What's the last book?
Muppet Show number 6.
Oh, The Muppet Show, right. That's really good. The Muppet Show is a great book if you have, I guess, children, and then also if you're a child at heart like myself. And it's about Robin, who is Kermit's nephew, and no one ever notices him. And he sees this woman come in, and she's got a briefcase, and it says CEO on it. And he thinks that she's from the orphanage, and it turns out that she's not from the orphanage, and he's going to run away. And he hangs out with some vagrants, and there's like a whole one-page thing where they do the death of a salesman with the Frog Boy Scouts or the Frog Scouts.
Kids love Arthur Miller references.
I know. So, but it's really funny, and there's no words, and there's one of the frogs is in like a sheet, like a Halloween ghost costume, because the one brother is dead in Death of a Salesman. And I thought it was really funny because I took some theater classes in college.
When he meets with the vagrants, does he look to score?
This isn't that kind of book.
Oh, so freebasing.
This isn't J.T. Krull's Muppet Show. It's a lot of fun. I love how there's like there's great vignettes, and it's a lot of great visual storytelling in this book. So even if you're not a kid, you can appreciate what this guy's doing in the comic. And this is the guy who's going to be doing the Thor book, right, with Somni?
Oh, Langridge.
Langridge, yeah.
Yeah.
So that makes me even more excited about that Thor book coming out, because he just does some really great stuff with sequential storytelling. So
I'm looking forward to the Warriors 3 doing Death of the Salesman.
Yes.
That'll be fun.
And if you liked this, you will like The Great Muppet Caper, because there are Muppets in it.
On the nose.
Also Dark Crystal.
On the nose.
Okay. Less so, but...
Noises Off, which is about a play within a play.
There you go.
There you go. Nice work.
Awesome.
Wow.
So that was what we thought of this week's books. Come to iFanboy, make your pull list. You can rate and review your books, and you can write our user reviews. And so we talk about it on the show here. So let's get to it. The first one is from Simon One, who spells with a PSY. He reviewed iZombie number 2, and he gave the story a 3 out of 5, and the art a 4 out of 5, and 0.22% of the iFanbase made it the pick of the week. And Simon says, iZombie 2 seemed quite a bit different than the first in that it jumped around to so many different sets of characters quite a lot. It was hard to tell who the main character was, which is obviously Gwen the Zombie, throughout the comic, but all the different groups of people were filled with distinct, intriguing characters that the reader can start to like or dislike. What sets iZombie apart is the excellent use of colors throughout the first 2 issues, especially issue 2. The cover gives a great glimpse of what the reader can expect inside. All Red does an excellent job here, and in it alone can be worth the price of admission. Thoughts?
With the first issue, I was really torn. I thought the art was amazing. It was really, really strong. And the coloring also really strong. The script, not so much. It just didn't do anything for me. And I was thinking about picking the second one up, but no. So.
Josh, same thoughts?
I'm not even a big All Red fan, so.
What do you like?
Not All Red?
You like Jock. That's all you like.
No, that's not true at all. You know it.
All right.
It's not my thing. So I didn't keep reading it.
I read the second issue. It was better, but in the same sense that Paul said, I'm not really into it. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it more than the first issue, which was like Paul. I thought the story was very sort of average, and the art was great. And this issue, the art actually was not as good as the first issue, and the story was better. So it sort of flip flopped. Mm-hmm. And it's intriguing. There's zombies. They've added the vampires in sort of an interesting way, but I don't know. I haven't decided if I'm going to pick it up the third issue or not yet. I'm torn.
All right. Well, sticking with the Vertigo theme, IB Agree, which is awesome, says of Sweet Tooth number 10, which he gives the story a 5 out of 5 and the art out of 5 out of 5, and the pick of the week is 11.5%. This might be my favorite issue of Sweet Tooth yet. I said it earlier this week that I felt Gus's half of the story had been neglected of late, and I was looking forward to seeing Jeff Lemire refocus the plot.
Lemire.
I know, but I was trying to push through. The plot on the titular character. And guess what? I got exactly what I wanted. Jeopard is nowhere to be seen in this issue as we go deep into Sweet Tooth's repressed memories of a childhood in the woods with his father. Many questions are finally answered, at least partially. And as in any great ongoing serialized narrative, the more we learn about Gus's past, the more questions are raised. I don't think I've been as eager for the next issue of this series as since the last page reveal at the end of number 5. I think that he's right. This has been the best issue in a while, mostly on the art front. He really pushed it in terms of layouts and things like that. And it was kind of a trippy story anyway, so he really got to go nuts on the panels and things like that, which was really nice.
They're walking through the antlers.
Yeah.
It's a really crazy visual. And then walking into his ear, which could have been way over the top, but I think with the way Lemire writes the dialogue and everything and how it's so grounded and natural, mm-hmm. that it worked.
Yeah, no,
I haven't heard a lot of talk about this book in a while from you guys.
Well, here's the thing, and I think that Connor, I think that you made the right call in reading it in trade. It's not a lot happens from each one. They're very quick reads, and that's not a bad thing about it at all, but it just kind of feels like, I don't know, I feel like it might be more fun to read.
I do typically read it in trade. I picked this up because I knew we were going to be talking about it on the show, and it's. I think the way he rations out information is really, really nice when you're reading it as a trade. Not to say that it's bad in single issues, but I think it's a really great job of world building he's doing.
The issues breathe a lot. He's not trying to cram a bunch in there, and in a way that's good, but
he's a long game player. Like, he plays that deep game where you, like, you know, Essex County is a thick tome, and it takes its time building character and setting and place.
Yeah, but I mean, the fact is, like, you can read that big Essex County thing in not a whole lot of time. You know, like, it's not like a really heavy read, even though it feels really long.
Because his style is spare.
Yeah. That's great. It's fine, but it doesn't, for issues, it doesn't make me quite as happy as I want it.
I hope this gets a nice, like, healthy run, and it could be something like Why the Last Man. That's what I'd like to see. I think it's as powerful and as interesting in terms of how the information comes out.
Yeah. And you know, like, this is issue 10. I think this has been pick of the week twice already by me. So, you know, it's not like I don't like the series. Mm-hmm. It isn't, but it's just, you know, because of the pace, like, a lot doesn't happen a lot. It's just there's a lot of nice character stuff, and so it's good. But anyway, you get the point. Do you have a suggestion for this, or does that count?
Oh, for, yeah.
Also, iZombie.
What? Oh, iZombie, I said Life is a House, because it's touching. And Sweet Tooth, I said Burn Notice, and I don't remember why.
What?
That's a TV show.
It's not a movie. It's a TV series, but it is pretty good.
I can't argue with what I wrote.
It's about a fugitive, sort of.
All right, so those are user reviews. You go to ifanboy.com every week. You can find the comics page. You can make your pull list. You can rate and review books. And if you write a good review, we'll feature on the show, so make them good.
Let me ask you a question. People out there... He's getting me back because we grumbled about his suggestions. Hey, do you like the show and the site and all the stuff that you get for free?
Well, yeah. Oh, you're talking to them. Okay.
You can be the...
You can role play if you want.
Okay, all right. Okay.
I do, sir. I don't know. I like chili, though. There's a lot of good and easy ways to support iFanboy, and we really appreciate it if you do. Make sure you check out the sponsors we talked about. We were talking about DCBS, who sponsors this show, and the people who advertise on the site. Click on those banners. Get over there. Or if you're buying anything on Amazon, you can go to ifanboy.com/Amazon and click on the little Powered by Amazon button. It'll just take you right into Amazon.com, and anything you buy there will help support the site. With no cost or extra effort to you. But if you do that, then you just bookmark that address for Amazon as your address for Amazon. You never have to think about it again. And Connor's actually retroactively bought us a Porsche.
Yes.
I don't know if anyone knows that.
And I bought it through Amazon.
Yeah.
Chris is going to be really pissed about that when he's delivering.
True enough. Yeah. Chris, is that your guy?
Yeah. Let's not get into that. Let's not get into it too deep.
Sorry. Okay. It's just frightening. You're referring to my first name now. You can buy T-shirts that we have. There's the Fear Agent shirt, which is a very lovely
shirt.
I like wearing my... Already did. What do you got for me now? There'll be other ones in the future.
There's one coming up soon before San Diego.
There's one coming up before San Diego. Also, you can be an iFanboy member. And Paul, I believe you did try to join that. We went, get away. Get away, son.
Yeah.
You can't be eligible for the giveaways. We told you. We've had this discussion between us and HR.
It's like
a
country club. It's just, I don't.
If you are an iFanboy member.
Carol HR told you, she sent you a letter.
That is your way of saying definitively, I really like this. It's a big, important part of my life, and I want to help support it for. Relatively low cost, $4 a month. You can pay that for a bad comic, or $10 a month if you really feel like being a good guy, but we'll take either. For that, you become eligible for the contest that we do on a very regular basis. We'll send you a little prize pack with a comic book, and at the higher level, you get a T-shirt as well, and also just more the thanks of a grateful nation, meaning us. But, I mean, that's just a way to be like, you know what, this stuff is important to me, and I really appreciate it, and I can do this little thing to help out and keep it going. And we really appreciate the people who do that and then the people who sign up as we keep going and do it on an ongoing basis. So thank you all very much. And to do the iFanboy membership, you can go to ifanboy.com/store. Let's move on with the show. Enough of that.
Okay, email time. First email's from Pat from Philly, which is Philadelphia, for all of you who don't know. Pat was saying, I was wondering if there's any good mystery comics, whether it be a crime or sort of like weird mysteries like in Lost.
Yeah, I didn't have an answer for him, so I thought money you might.
Watchmen.
Did you guys have an answer? Watchmen. Oh, yeah.
If you don't know what the end of Watchmen is now by this point, I'm trying to. I had a really hard time with this.
Mystery is hard in comics. Because a lot of people don't have the patience for the unfolding mystery stories.
Identity Crisis.
That's a good one.
That is a good one, by the way. Although when I first time I read it, I didn't know who the hell anybody was. I was like, okay, I don't know who that was, but there's the killer. Long Halloween by Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale.
Yep.
That's a mystery comic. And then I think Gotham Central. I mean, Batman's the detective, so that's sort of easy stuff. But I think there's a lot of mystery stuff that goes on in Gotham Central, too. I'm sure there are others. And if you want to let us know, you can comment under the show and let us know.
From Hell? Looking at my shelf.
From Hell's not really.
Hulk.
Hulk? There
Red
it
Hulk.
Is. Red Hulk.
The Red Hulk.
Red Hulk. There you go.
The greatest mystery of our modern age.
I want to see that on a cover.
Patrick, wow, that's
the greatest mystery of our
The Vertigo crime books.
Yes.
Yeah. Some of them. Some of them better than others.
Why the Last Man is sort of, you know, in a way.
Although at the end they say it's not about the mystery, so it kind of undercuts the whole mystery angle of it.
It kind of was. What happened? Doesn't matter. Anyway.
Lobo Fan writes in.
Guy, what's that about?
It's a mystery. Lobo Fan writes and says, all right, before I ask this question, I would like to have it on the record that I love Frank Miller's work. You got that?
Yes.
Good. Then I can ask this. Do you guys believe that Miller's writing level is up to par with his art? To explain, I read 305 times in a single night, but can't seem to remember specific phrases from the book, whereas his art is vivid in my mind. By the way, my favorite movie changes 5 times in a single year because I memorize every action and phrase from the movie. So my mental acuity is not what causes this problem. Also, I'm not saying that his script sucks. What I mean is, other than the Joker smoking as he enters the room and saying, I'm going to kill everyone in this room, Frank Miller's writing is forgettable when set next to his art. So what I'm wondering is this. Is it just me, or can you see what I mean? Thank you.
I think you're coming at it from the wrong angle. Because in a movie, people say things, and then that audio gets trapped in your head as a thing like that. I don't tend to remember a lot of comic book dialogue either, but also with Frank Miller, he's a guy who's working with words and images and putting those things together. If something sticks in your head, it's a moment, it's a feeling, it's the way that it looks. It may not necessarily be the words, but
the dialogue in movies tends to be the main thrust because it's the sound, mm-hmm. and in the comics, it's the art because it's the visual, because you're not hearing the sound.
I mean, dialogue isn't everything that, you know, falls under writing. Writing is also action. So those visuals that he's doing in 300, it's not just like, I mean, they look cool the way he's rendered them, but those are his decisions as to what.
Yeah, you know, sometimes I think people don't understand what comic writers actually do. They're not just scripting the pages. They're writing the action, too. So the writing is part of every...
It's not like back in the day where they had, like Jack Kirby, like, drawing the whole comic, and then Stan came in and, like, wrote in, you know, the dialogue.
Yeah, like when there was a silent issue a while back, people were complaining that the writer shouldn't have got
There's
paid.
No writing. No one wrote anything in here because there's no way.
It is harder to write a silent page than it is to write one with dialogue.
Yes.
Yeah. So that... In that sense, I don't agree that Frank Miller's... I also really like Frank Miller's writing. It's very pulpy, but I mean, you know, I can think of dialogue from The Dark Knight Returns.
Totally.
To me, the story is as important as the art. The art's really important. It's one of the reasons why I don't like the sequel, because the art style had changed in the intervening years. It didn't feel like the same world to me. But, you know, the story is what got me originally in that book. Because when I was a kid and I read it, you know, I wasn't attuned enough to really like the art as much as I did the story.
I just think that it all works together. Like
it's not
a separate thing anymore with his work. They just all sort of go together, but you're going to remember parts of it that, you know, remember what you do. But the thing is, like, I don't – like when you hear somebody say dialogue in a movie, I know everything in Goodfellas too, and I've read Watchmen a billion times. I can't think of any quotes from Watchmen off the top of my head. It doesn't mean Alan Moore's writing is no good.
I still picture Welcome to Hell when he reaches to the ground and grabs the guy. I mean, it works together. It's the image plus the dialogue. It's all the same package. If you got an email for us, we're at contact@ifanboy.com. Tell us where you're from. Tell us your name. We'll get back to you either on the show or via the electronic message. or the weekly letters column
on ifanboy.com.
All right, so voicemail time. Let's do a couple of voicemails really quick. Our first voicemail has another either-or scenario.
Jason from Canada. Do you guys think that there is a happy medium between the collector mentality and the reader mentality? That is to say, the CGC grading with a magnifying glass people versus the toss it on the coffee table, bend it, fold it in your pocket people. Talk to me about all that.
It's an interesting perspective because, as we've seen, based on our little ripping a comic book out of its CGC shell, some people are very...
still available on YouTube if you want to check that out.
Yeah, and the comments are really quite... Funny. I still can't afford a shirt.
Every time we get an email saying this new comment in the video, I get excited.
Yeah, it's good. And it's a little facetious on our part. I understand why there are collectors and people who do that. For me, you know, they don't have to be mutually exclusive, but what I don't want is stuff that collector stuff to infect my ability to enjoy something, which I don't think happens all that much, but when, like, I can't buy the cover I want, or this doesn't happen so much, but Connor, you were talking about, I forget what issue it was, but you said you went and bought it in the store. Oh, it was Death of Superman. It was $10 the day it was on sale. Like,
yeah,
that stuff doesn't happen anymore.
And
I don't want that. I don't like that causes... I know Marvel does stuff from time to time to increase the collectability of their books, and that always bothers me. Because I just wonder, it's a product, you know, and I guess there's some collectability left, but I feel like the whole thing is so small now, you know.
They're trying to manufacture an era that doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
I don't know if people are reading comics to make, which I guess in that sense can make comics more collectible because there's less of them, but then again, there aren't going to be many people who care anymore.
It's a victimless crime, though, right, at this point?
Pretty much.
Not, I mean, if you're going to collect stuff, it's you know. Scratches your itch.
I still think it's ridiculous to encase a fairly modern comic book so that it's unreadable and then sort of like assigning a value to it. And like, I get it. Some things like a Walking Dead original number one is worth a ton of money now because it's rare and people want to have it. And I get that. I've certainly been there and I don't mind that people are charging more for it. But like, those are very rare cases. I mean, I get if you have a copy of a 1930s Batman story and you don't want it to degrade anymore, I get sealing that thing up.
There are truly valuable comics, and that's
right.
That is one of them. I do applaud CGC and Wizard for creating a market and an industry out of thin air. And that's basically what they did with their CGC grading. They basically started grading these comics, and all of a sudden these modern comics were worth things because they said they were.
I mean, when we were kids, there was a price guide in the back of Wizard, but there was no CGC stuff. That stuff didn't exist. But now everything. Anything that was supposed to be, like, that's the only way that something's worth something, apparently, which is pretty interesting. Like, it's like a monopoly.
But is there a happy medium? Yes. I mean, there's lots of mediums. There's people all along the spectrum between collectors and readers, and you know, I was just putting books in a drawer box yesterday. I didn't bag them, but I put them in a box. There's people all along the way.
Yeah. Although I hate being stuck behind the guy who's trying to find his perfect copy.
Yes.
I will push him out of the way and grab that top copy every time. And then afterwards, I saw it was nicked, and I was like, well, I guess he was right then. Like, that's fine. I mean, but like, I still have tendencies. Like, I don't know if I would fold up a comic and stick it in my back pocket. I'm close. I mean, there's things I would do. I don't find, like, it used to be all comic books were sacred, and now I'm mostly over that. But some of them, like I'll get a little fold. A bit. Oh.
I have rolled them up in recent times a lot.
Good.
Or turned them around like a newspaper, like folded the paper back.
It's almost though like that's what you do, and this is what we do, and ne'er the twain shall meet.
I don't think it necessarily has to be a war. It just means necessarily you don't have the same interests. You know, like people who are super collectors, I don't have the same interest in the medium that they do. We come from different angles.
Probably going to poke fun at you, though.
Yes. Well, that's our job. We poke fun at you.
That's not really a war I want to see either, because what would you fight with? And the paper cuts.
Well,
I'd roll up my comics, use them as a bludgeon.
Yeah, and then they would be so shocked that you would win immediately.
There you go.
We make fun of each other. We make fun of you. We make fun of the collectors. Everyone gets made fun of equally out of Fanboy.
And we can't afford good shirts. You have to go to that YouTube video to see what we're talking about.
Our next voicemail has a very interesting question.
Hey, fanboys, my name's Danny. I'm from Washington, D.C., and I got a question for you about what you think is the best non-comic book sort of adaptation or story, you know, superhero adaptation or story in another medium, not in comics. So we're talking film, television, novels, you know, video games, all that sort of thing. We were talking about this a new upcoming superhero show called No Ordinary Family with Michael Chiklis in it. We were talking about The Walking Dead series coming out next season, so we were wondering what you guys thought was the best adaptation of a superhero story or the best superhero story told not in comic books.
So he's asking, and I think he used the word adaptation where he didn't mean to, the best superhero stories in another medium besides comics that didn't come from comics. So we'll say original superhero properties,
right?
Non-comics.
Sure.
Dark Knight.
There was some basis for that.
Okay.
I feel like
League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Watchmen.
Sorry, go ahead, Josh.
There's not a lot of time left, is all I'm
Sorry,
saying.
We're running late.
What's funny is that when you watch a lot of stuff like this or whatever, you find that you're like, hey, that's sort of familiar to the comics that do already exist. But I think if I had to come up with an answer, I would say the best thing that I can think of is probably The Incredibles, which is not specifically based on a comic book. I mean, it takes from the norm. You know, if another example would be Heroes. I'm not going to recommend that.
No, I wouldn't put that on a best list.
But I think The Incredibles is the best one because it mixed a sort of a lighthearted, fun thing with the ability to do all those things in that CGI animated world. You know, better than Sky High.
Oh, I was gonna say Sky High. I like Sky High.
It was good, but The Incredibles was better.
No, The Incredibles was better, but I like Sky High a lot. That was my answer. You stole my answer, you son of a bitch.
Sorry.
The Dead Poets Society.
I have another answer, actually. Sky High was going to be my answer. Actually, one of the best superhero stories I have read in any medium, across anything in recent times, was Soon I Will Be Invincible, which is a novel.
Okay, yeah.
That was great. That was a superhero story completely unrelated to anything in comics. Although,
does Cavalier and Clay count?
Yeah, I was about to say. I think that's the best book.
There's no actual superhero action in it, but it has all the things that I like about superheroes in it. Like the whole sensibility and the theme.
Yeah, you can get by with that, I think. But I suggest Soon I Will Be Invincible to anybody who likes superheroes. That was a fantastic superhero story.
What about Unbreakable?
I like that as well.
I like that.
I didn't like it as much going forward, but a lot, you know, it's good.
I'm really sad that he didn't make any movies after that. That's really unfortunate because he could have done some really good stuff.
I think I'm at the point where I'm going to watch The Happening because I think it might be laughably awful.
It is laughably awful. And Mark, you know me, I'm pretty lenient.
Yeah, you are. It's true if you're saying it. But like Mark Wahlberg, who I kind of already laugh at when he says anything.
Because he talks like he's talking to children.
What?
Whenever he's...
You're in a perfect storm of fun for that one. I think you should definitely watch it tonight.
Wow, did you do that on purpose?
No. Oh, wow. Look at me. He was good in that movie.
No, he was good in that movie. I'm going to be a huge star.
So there's some,
you don't
there's
understand,
some,
Mom.
There's some superhero comics, not a superhero stories, not adapted from comics. If you want to leave us a voicemail, 888 fanboys, which is 326-2697. Tell us where you're from. Tell us your name. Keep your own 30-40 seconds, and then have fun. Have fun with it.
Good questions this week, people.
Good ones.
Let's be done with it. Check out our Don't Miss podcast that comes out every single Monday. Most Mondays, yeah. Last week we were talking to David Peterson about the new Mouse Guard book, Legends of the Guard, which is more like a little anthology with other people doing Mouse Guard. And then this week coming up, Chris Neeson will be talking to Tim Seeley about Hackslash.
I'm excited. That comes out next week. I'm going to check that out.
Appears at Image Comics for the first time, and it has the sexiest of covers. This last week, speaking of Chris Neeson, he sat in the big boy chair. He did a full-on Talksplode. Because he's good at that.
Oh.
And he talked to Mike Perkins, the artist on Stephen King's The Stand. It was on Captain America for a little while, too, you might remember. I always like artist conversations because we don't hear from them as much.
He was good on Captain America and The Stand. And now he's probably making actual money doing Stephen King books. This is the first week of our June giveaways. If you go to ifanboy.com, there's a red post at the top with a June giveaways announcement. There's three this month. And the first is a limited edition Iron Man Fandango gift card worth $25. We're giving away two of those. So you can use these cards to get Fandango movie tickets. You can get any movie. It doesn't have to be Iron Man 2. Although, if I'm the winner, I'm going to use it for Iron Man 2 because I still haven't seen Iron Man 2.
Are you just doing it to bug people now, aren't you?
Kind of.
I love that.
But I kind of also really want to see it. I'm torn between using it
You could see it and then lie about it.
Satiating my desire to see it. I also want to listen to this podcast. That's the other thing. So we're giving away two passes, $25 passes for tickets, and the winners are Matt Starr and Anise Ansari.
Damn it.
So Paul and I did not win this time. You win this round, iFanboy. We're giving away two more next week, and the week after that, there's going to be a Dynamo 5 giveaway. That's a pretty hefty giveaway. If you go to iFanboy.com in the red post, you can check out what we're giving away. You can win these giveaways by picking iFanboy member. They're only available to members, so you have to be an iFanboy member to be eligible. You got the information from Josh earlier in the show how you can do that, but go to iFanboy.com/store for more.
Get to iFanboy.com. You can read my written review, because now every 3 weeks I just write an Avengers review. That's what I do now. And then you can comment on that or all the other discussion topics. Really good week for discussion this past week. Had a lot of fun talking about Marvel doing their day and date for the first time, doing it good, doing it bad, whichever. Some casting stuff, things like that. Make sure to get to iFanboy.com. We're working on it all the time, all weeks. If you only listen to the shows, it goes on, is what I'm saying. Plenty of writers, including Paul, working his butt off, and then Word Balloon podcast, other podcasts, blah, blah, blah. Go to ifanboy.com. Go to ifanboy.com/about. You can find out who we are and how to connect with us in other ways on the internet. Then there's the video show last week.
The Flash.
Wow, Flash. There's the mistake. I almost made it to the end.
Flash.
Last week was The Flash, and then this next week coming up, The Blackest of Nights.
Oh, we're going to look back at Blackest Night, are we?
We are. We are looking back at it right now on my other window.
Oh.
It'll be ready.
Awesome. What did we say? I don't remember.
I made fun of Ron.
Oh, boy. One of those shows. You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com, call our voicemail line 888-FANBOY-326-2697. Any questions, comments, concerns, discussion topics, etc. If you like us, you can write a review on iTunes. We appreciate that. It helps people find the show. You can do it for this show, for the video show. Thank you very much if you do. Even better than that is to tell your friends, your comic store people, the people you meet in the street, the guy at the bookstore, the guy at the methadone clinic, the guy you meet when you're running across the country, handcuffed to Robert De Niro.
Wow.
All that stuff. You can tell all those guys. Look. Spread that fanboy word.
Hey, Paul.
Yeah.
If you like this episode of the iFanboy podcast, what movie should you follow it up with?
Oh, Jesus, tough. Network, probably.
Oh.
You went out strong. That was pretty good. Because that's kind of a good movie no matter what you do.
Yeah.
Yeah, good stuff.
Irrelevant.
It's always.
All right. Well,
we're mad as hell and we're not going to take it anymore.
Until next time, I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
And I am Josh Flanagan.
What the hell did I do that for? You're just another guy. Okay, you're kind of sexy, but you're not really special. I want mine. If you take me home, come on, take me home. I want mine. If you take off all your clothes, come on, take them off.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is a, like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over. In your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it, and sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing. You should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.